Today. I'm your host, Brian Martinson, along with Jeremy Katz.
Brian, every now and then, it's really good to hear your voice.
And, of course, Spencer Yasmin.
It's great to hear you, Brian. It's great to be back with you.
It is good to be back. It has been a while since we've all gotten together to record. Like,
you know, every episode starts that way.
It really does.
It is good to be back.
my anniversary is right around the corner. That's how it's progressed.
Well, and Spencer, let's not forget, the critics said that the podcast jumped the shark when you got married.
And we haven't disappointed them on that.
It's been a year? Jesus.
Yeah. I know. I think the podcast is, you know, struggling to find how it exists with a married Spencer. Because, I mean, previously we were used to all the stories of Spencer, you know, catcalling women and, you know, living the single life, and he and Jeremy kind of palling around Dallas and getting into trouble. And now that he's married, that just...
Hey, ladies!
Woo-hoo! Well, Spencer, you know, after 1 year of marriage, you know, how do you feel about marriage?
Should we hold this conversation for our special 39th episode where we talk about... Because, you know, we really should want to dedicate a full episode to... the 1 year anniversary of Spencer and Corey's wedding, what they would do differently, like not only in terms of the ceremony and the reception, but like what would they do differently in life? Would Corey marry somebody else, for example?
Well, and also, let's not forget what the video editors of the wedding video would do differently, because Brian, I'm not sure if you heard, but there's a certain person, a listener of the podcast, who makes an appearance at the end of the wedding.
Who?
I believe it's Mr. Francisco.
Actually, he's Mr. Oakland now, which doesn't really roll off the tongue, does it?
Yeah.
He's found the love of a young lady, and anyone who can stand Mr. San Francisco that long to live with him, like day in and day out, has the utmost respect in my mind. I mean, that is a heavy lift, let's be honest.
But Jeremy, you were right. The videographers definitely had a major mess up. At the wedding, we got the DVD, and during the interview segment, everyone's giving their kind wishes, and then it goes to Dan, and he proceeds to say, keep in mind that damn laugh, go fuck yourself. And then the camera shuts off after that. That's the last interview, the last word that
keep
I
in mind, Corey's grandparents were set this video. Like, why would they keep that in there?
Oh, Spencer and Corey were so excited to... Oh, my God!
Wait, did your check bounce or something? Was this kind of like a little FU to you and Corey from the videographer?
We have no idea. I mean, all I know is Nanny and Papa are very upset right now. We're having to deal with that.
Rightfully so.
Furious about what took place. They're like, who's this damn
Rosenbaum? Here's what you do. Yeah, give it to executive producer Derek. Not only does he do great audio work, but he can do some video work as well. He can resplice that video, remove Dan completely from it. It's done. Solved.
It's just weird that like whoever's editing that together, who clearly that's his full-time profession, thought that someone saying go fuck yourself was so meaningful to the wedding.
Well, there is a director's cut.
It, but it should be the last thing you hear in the video.
There is a director's cut. And in the director's cut, the guy's wearing like, you know, really douchey sunglasses. He's like, you know, I was just trying to get the overall edginess of the wedding, you know. So I thought a little profanity would be really good for Jamie and Papa, you know. I was like, okay, first of all, why is there a director's cut? And secondly, who is his place to say what is edginess and what isn't? My dancing is edginess, okay? That's funny.
And I'm happy to say, Brian, there is a good about 5 minutes of you plugging the podcast on that video.
Oh, God.
Oh, really? Good. Then I should have really declared that trip as a business expense on my
taxes. That was another thing. Gammy and Papa were like, who's this homo and why is he talking about a podcast? I'm like, Gammy.
They just know he's gay.
Well, I mean, clearly, look at you're clearly Jewish, and they know Spencer is. By process of elimination, I am the gay.
What did they say when they saw the one black guy, Grant, at the wedding?
Why is he inside?
Why is he serving me drinks?
There was a lot of confusion about Grant at the wedding, because he was the first one to walk down the aisle. You know.
Well, you said people were confused that they were at the wrong wedding.
Everyone started getting... If you notice, there was like the elderly in the front two rows started to get up and like, our mistake, we're in the wrong wedding.
My bad.
My bad. And the rabbi quickly had to tell him, no, sit down, it's his friend, you know.
Well, that's nothing compared to some of the shade that was being thrown towards the wedding party by some of the elderly people that I was sitting around as people were walking up. Like, I've never heard so much, like kind of condescending, bitchy comments about people's dresses and what they were wearing as they were walking up the aisle. I'm like, really?
Really? That's a wedding. The bridesmaids?
Yes.
Oh, like,
some people were like, I went to pick that dress.
I just hope they weren't Yasmins, Brian.
I can't, like, all you Jews look alike. I couldn't tell.
Well, there's only six Yasmins at the whole wedding.
So. About 12. Yeah, 12. It was a good turnout.
All right. So, you know, we will recap more about Spencer's 1 year anniversary on the next episode. But I thought I would give everyone, because I get a lot of email on the about the podcast, you know, begging me to talk more about my dating life, because people know that I'm single and I'm out there and I'm, you know, trying to like make my way through. So I thought I'd give you guys a little bit of an update, and maybe Jeremy, you can chime in about maybe the status of your love life as well, since you know, we all know that Spencer's love life now is non-existent.
What's a love life
for the past year?
For the past year. So I want to say this is breaking news.
Nothing, baby.
Play the breaking news sound that Spencer found.
Spencer, hit it.
I have left Grindr.
No!
I've been off Grindr now for about a month and a half, 2 months.
And real quick, Brian, Spencer, you know what Grindr is, right?
Yes, it's an activity site where people get together to participate in like social activities like kickboxing and dodgeball.
Yes. Is that correct, Brian?
There are certainly activities that one partakes in.
Okay, good.
People that you, yes. I mean,
I'm going right now.
You absolutely should install on your phone. Hop on it. Like I honestly think that you would do better than you expect on Grindr. You know, I'm just throwing that out.
I'd love to play dodgeball.
And Jeremy would clean up on Grindr, because everyone in West Hollywood is looking for a top. I mean, that's just what people are looking for. There's far too many bottoms in West Hollywood. Jeremy, you would fill a niche, both like literally and figuratively, very, very well.
I think I should download it, Spencer.
I mean, don't you want to play dodgeball?
he will be dodging balls. But I left Grindr after I basically had a situation where, you know, like, I'm not going to mince words. It's a hookup app. You don't have to necessarily hook up on it. In fact, the vast majority of conversations I've had on Grindr did not involve, you know, anything more than some like flirtatious banter, and sometimes far less than even that. But, you know, I'm human, and at times, especially like, say, 11 o'clock at night, you know, Jeremy, you know the story. Like, you're, it's late at night, you're by yourself, you're thinking, well, I could just take care of myself, but if I can find someone that would take care of me, then why not, right? Am I right?
Yeah, and then, Spencer, that cold breeze comes in the room.
Love the cold breeze.
So, there's this guy that I was talking with for like a week and a half, 2 weeks, and he was close by. So he and I decided, like, okay, what the hell? Like, you know, I have a sense that you're at least not psycho, which is, of course, the I know it's a low bar of entry that make sure you're not psycho, but you'd be surprised how few men in LA can't even cross that bar. So I haven't come over.
Had there been an exchange of a cock shot up until this point?
There had not been, because I'm classy that way, Jeremy.
You are classy.
You know, I don't. First of all, I don't want to scare people off, because I mean,
what about the left nipple?
My left nipple is like, first of all, I love my nipples mainly because they're very responsive. Like, they're unusually responsive for a man. So I
understand, but do you ever send a shot of your left nipple? Not right, just left.
That's a Joel move. Long, shake your body, baby, do the conga. Like, I don't personally like to show a lot of skin. Not that I think my skin puts asses in the seats. I just, you know, I like to keep a little mystery about what's going on.
You're old fashioned.
So he comes over. I mean, we've exchanged enough like pictures where I have an idea his face that his face is cute, and like he looks height and weight proportional. And I open the door, and it was one of those things where he was cute. Pictures are probably not the most accurate representation of what he looked like. Like, he maybe had them airbrushed slightly or something, or Photoshop, so that, you know how like they can make models look skinnier than they actually are.
It's Spencer. It's these filters nowadays. You can't tell what someone looks like.
But at that point, like, you know, he comes over. It's late at night, and like he's, you know, I'm not the kind of guy who's gonna like just tell someone like, no, you need to leave now. So I come in and at least chat for a bit. And he's nice, and he's certainly flirtatious. So I'm kind of like, at this point, it's late and whatever. And so I kind of, against my better judgment, I give in. But the whole time I'm giving in, and that is code for something. I'm like, if I had a watch on my wrist, if I had like the Apple Watch on my wrist, I would have been looking at it, wondering how long this was going to take. It was just
so wait, just so I, Brian, back up a second, just so I understand. He not like you guys arranged to meet up. You've never met him before. He just knocks on the door, and you kind of you let him in, and then there's like this awkwardness. There's this awkward pause of like, how do we go
from the living room
to the bedroom?
No. We chatted. Like, he came in, and we sat down in the living room. We chatted for a bit. Like, we chatted for, like, you know, 20, 30 minutes. Like, had, you know, maybe, like, a drink or something. It's something that could just kind of, like, set things at ease. Because I'm not the kind of guy who's literally, like, the door's unlocked. Come on in. That's just not my style.
This sounds very prostitute-ish. I'm just going to go on record. But keep going.
You know, it, Spencer, it's one of those things where you haven't experienced it because you've been with Corey, you know, for a while. But dating is... Honestly, between dating and online, you know, online sites, like, that's kind of how it is now. It makes it so – we've almost reverted as a society back 20 years ago where, you know, casual sex is so common now because it is so easy. Like, you have these apps, Tinder and Grindr, that literally you could put no effort in. You could put photos that really aren't you, apparently, and, you know, you meet someone, like – Brian's telling us right now, like, it's crazy. You know, back in the day, you used to wine and dine women, and you barely got any back then. Now,
and it costs
like,
so much.
You know.
So we're doing our thing, and it was just, it was honestly so, like, dreadfully awful and, like, ugh, that.
Was he moaning a lot? Like, over too much?
No, he was just, like, he was a little, like, maybe chunkier than I would have liked him to be when, like, maybe he was wearing Spanx or something.
Did you get caught between his third and fourth roll on his stomach?
Gross. But long story short, it was so bad. And I was so happy when it was over. And it, like, essentially, it shocked my system so severely that the minute, like, basically, like, 5 minutes after he left, I just deleted Grindr, and I haven't looked back since.
I take it he didn't spend the night.
He did not spend the night. And it's one of those things where, like, I feel bad on some level because, like, I'm sure he'd be mortified if he knew that hooking up with him was, like, the straw that broke the camel's back and got people off Grindr. But at the same time, he kind of was. I mean, it was just... that bad.
Right. Did he think it went well?
I can't go into his mind. I'm you know, he seemed pleased.
Brian always brings it.
I won't say give him my A game because I didn't want him coming back for seconds.
Did you leave a mint on the bed after, you know, maybe he got up to go to the bathroom afterwards?
No, I definitely did gargle with Listerine though after. But you know, onwards and upwards. I've been on more respectable sites since. You know, because I am still looking to date people. I'm not looking for like quick casual sex. That really generally is not my MO. So I have been on Tinder, and like Tinder for straight people is what Grindr is for gays. I'm freely admitting that. Like when Jeremy says he's on Tinder, I know that he's generally speaking not looking for love everlasting.
Although with that said, Brian, you know, one of our good friends did meet her now current fiance on Tinder. So
yes, and
you do hear those stories.
And a broke clock is right twice a day. So I mean, it's certainly possible, but you know, nobody. I think in straight land, I think and mazel to them. I couldn't be happier that they're engaged. I mean, it certainly takes a lot of the burden off of us because he helps keep her distracted. But, you know, I think they are the exception rather than the rule. But I also think that, you know, finding love in general can be a crapshoot. So anything that you can do to put that energy out into the universe that you're looking for love or that you're open to dating, I think is a good thing. So I've been on a few dates with some people from Tinder, and some of them have gone very well. I was actually on a date last night, second date with this guy. Very, very nice guy. He actually lives close to a friend of the podcast, Joel. He's in Sherman Oaks. So he geographically is not undesirable. Like he's in the, like the map range of places where I could date. Like, you know, if someone says that they live in Pasadena, I'm like, okay, good luck to you. I'm not driving out to Pasadena to date you, or anything pretty much.
Oh, hell no.
Like basically there's like a 10 to 15 mile radius of like legitimate dating range that I would go for you. The problem with him though, and it's not really a problem, it's something I need to decide if I can get over. You know, there's a guy that both Jeremy and I know, who he reminds me a lot of, and that person is Matt Wolpe.
Based on appearance or
okay, so appearance-wise, he actually reminds me of a cross between Matt Wolpe and one of my exes. Not the last ex, but the ex like two or three exes ago. So like, there's aspects of him that I do find really attractive. Absolutely. But then there are times where he kind of exhibits Matt Wolpe-esque tendencies. And I think Matt Wolpe is an amazing guy. He's very
other
funny.
Than the last name.
Well, no, well, even the last name is amazing. But like what I had to decide whether or not I could date someone that constantly reminds me of Matt Wolpe. Like,
Professor, for I don't think you met Matt Wolpe. Great guy. He's one of these guys though that is always doing shticked. Like he's always on. It's right. Almost like he's got a microphone in his hand.
Never met anybody like that before.
Half our audience listening right now is like that.
So that's really the quandary that I have. Like, can I see myself like being naked with a guy who might always be on? And like, there's the one time for me that shtick doesn't work, and that's when my penis is out. I'm sorry. It's just like I don't want like.
Well, give us an example. Like, what was something you did shticky during intimate time?
Well, like, you know, like doing funny voices or asking like, where is this going to go next? Like, you know, like,
okay.
You know,
yeah. Just, it does take you out of the moment.
Yeah. Like when I'm in a passionate frame of mind, like, don't get me wrong. I think sex and comedy are naturally paired together. And there are things that happen when you're having sex with somebody that naturally make you laugh, but they're incidental to it. And no one should go into a sexual encounter with the idea that you're like, going to start, riffing on the topics of the day. Like, I mean, this is like, if something happens that is naturally funny, then going with that and acknowledging that it's funny, I have no problem with. But the idea that I'm like going to sleep with somebody who's like, what's the deal with condoms? I mean, like, I don't want that kind of activity.
I hear you.
So that's my dating update, people. Let's toss it over to Jeremy for a little update on his love life. Jeremy, take it away.
Take it away.
This is the Spencer real Dirty Talk Hollywood.
Second blowjob.
No, I'm at a good place right now. I am, it's interesting. There's been I've been hanging out with a couple of ladies, in recent the past, month or few weeks, and these are people that I had dated in the past, Spencer. So I, each one of them I had gone out with, we did dates, we did dinner, for one reason it didn't work out. And it's, we kind of just out of the blue, either, they hit me up or I ran into one. But it's kind of refreshing because, it didn't, we clearly tried to have a relationship and to have a meaningful relationship. And for some reason it didn't work out, but I do enjoy their company. So this has kind of been refreshing for me, Spencer, because it's like, there's no pressure on me. Like, they've already seen dating Jeremy and clearly that didn't work out for them.
Clearly they rejected dating Jeremy.
Yeah. They saw the best I could give them and clearly that wasn't enough.
Your best is not good enough for us.
Yeah, so it's kind of been a nice, a nice transition for me because it's like I don't feel like I have to put in time, I can hang out with them when I want to and vice versa. So it's kind of, it's one of those things that I realize, Spencer, it's not going to last very long because I've always said, you can only have, be in a casual relationship for so long. I mean, one person clearly will start having more feelings, or they'll meet someone else. It just, it doesn't last that long. So, you know, I'm enjoying it for what it is right now.
Well, I many mazels to that. I'm very happy to hear that. I mean, you know, but don't you think over time it's going to get more and more watered down?
By the time we release this episode, it's going to be over with. Because it's just how it is. But, like, you know, for me, one of the things I can always tell when I'm not, if I'm dating someone and we've been out, you know, a few times and whatever, and I always know, I hit that point where I realize that this is someone that I don't see myself in a serious relationship with, is when I find that I'm almost putting in time with them where I'm like, oh shit, I forgot to text this person. I should probably, you know, text them for appearance sake. And that's usually a sign for me when it's like, okay, well, why is that? That's, if I'm not excited to really talk to this person, that probably means something. So, right. You know, I'm sure Brian, that you're single, you've kind of
absolutely
had that,
and like,
as well.
And that's one of those things where the struggle is you want to make sure that you don't, like, if you feel like the relationship is kind of winding down, you want to kind of maybe slowly glide the descent to where it doesn't exist anymore, as opposed to just being the asshole who just completely drops off the face of the planet. Because I've been on, I will be honest, I've been on both the giving and receiving end of that asshole treatment, where like you just, the person just disappears into vapor. Like you don't hear from them ever again. And I've also been the guy who has never reached out to someone ever again. And It's totally immature and not something that I'm ever proud that I do, but I kind of own the fact that I do it sometimes, and I try to like not do that going forward. It's much better if you can kind of glide the end of the relationship down gradually and be kind of like, okay, we're now dissipating a little bit more and more. Like the amount of time that we're seeing each other is going down, the amount of time that we're texting is less. You're not maintaining me, I'm not maintaining you, and then eventually it just kind of peters out, and it doesn't feel as abrupt as the like sudden jump off the cliff lack of communication, where then you're left with like, wait, I thought we were having a good time, and all of a sudden you just disappeared on me.
No, yeah, I agree with you. And you know, for a lot of times with women, it's one of those things, Spencer, where I feel like unless I'm the one who's asked them out on a date, I don't see them, and sometimes I feel bad because it's like, you know, we'll have a nice night and we'll spend the night together, and then, you know, I haven't seen them for a little bit, and part of me is like, yeah, you know, I probably should see if they want to get dinner or something, but at the same time, it's like, you know, yeah, but they can also ask me out. Like, what, I feel like,
yeah,
why do I always have to
get,
be able to ask
I get
them
that
out?
Like we don't have that problem in gay culture, because there is, you know, at least for guys, we're kind of conditioned. Okay, if you're into somebody, you should just ask the question. You're not going to lose anything by asking, hey, do you want to go out? The worst you're going to get is rejected, and then you kind of dust yourself off and try again. Like, you find the next person that you're into, ask the question, and eventually someone's going to say yes. It may not be someone you want to say yes, but someone's eventually going to say yes. And once you start that dating relationship, it's much easier to just be like, hey, do you want to grab dinner? Do you want to see a movie? Do you want to go to the beach? Like, there's this ease in which gay men can hang out together in a relation, like in a romantic relationship, where there aren't the expectations of whose job is it to reach out to the other person to see if they want to hang out. There's it's much more egalitarian that way, I think, in gay relationships. With straight relationships, I think you're still saddled with the responsibility of being the instigator more often than not. And women have come a long way, baby, but haven't come to the point where they feel comfortable being the person who is seen as the aggressor or the initiator because of what society says that means about them.
I think it's not as easy as saying, you know, these are all men, these are all women. I think it's a lot of people are busy these days, you know, with their work, their professional careers, and it's like, you know, you have one shot at it. You go out and it's a good date, but then you gotta follow up. And I know what you're saying, Jeremy, about like you want the girl to take more of initiative. But from what I've seen, you know, even today with like my female friends, like they're just busy, you know, and like
wait,
you gotta
wait,
grab
wait,
their
wait,
attention.
Wait.
You got one shot at it. You gotta go for it. You know,
here, Corey lets you have female friends?
Sometimes.
At some point later, we should mind that, because I know.
Are they friends through Corey, or are they friends outside?
Yeah, we're all some friends. That's not like I got female friends. Look, this isn't sleazy Spencer at 24.
No, I'm not talking. I want to be clear. I'm not insinuating anything sleazy. What I am saying is that a lot of women in a relationship with a guy are not comfortable with the idea that they have female friends that are outside their circle of female friends. So I just wanted to investigate whether or not this was a like group associated with Corey, or are these like female friends outside of Corey's sphere?
Yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, she knows who people are.
Spencer. You're making it sound a little shady. Like, oh, I think Corey may be aware of them. Yeah. That sounds a little shady.
But let's bring Bubba on.
maybe she's all on board because she's like, oh, finally, like, I have some people who can take off a lot of the work of dealing with Spencer. Like, I need an army of females to deal with Spencer.
Yeah, I mean, I do vent a lot, so whoever has an open ear, I'm ready to go.
Hey, it's Scotty P, member of the flock who follows the voice of the voice of the voiceless, a movement seeking to hear Les Bryan and hear my top three favorite WWE superstars of all time. Number three, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. Number two, Bret the Hitman Hart. And number one, from my hometown of Memphis, Tennessee, Jerry the King Lawler. You're listening to Two Jews and a Gay, and now back to the program.
In our effort to be more topical, despite the fact that we release an episode every 2 months, we're going to talk about something that's big breaking news in the world of football, which is a shout out to Mr. December, who has pleaded with all three members of the cast to include more football topics.
He's not going to be Mr. December for much longer, though.
Well, next time he comes.
Let's hope not.
Next time he comes to LA, yeah, he might kick over to a different month.
I thought you were coming to Dallas.
Breaking news, Spencer, hit it.
I thought you were coming to Dallas.
When am I coming to Dallas?
I thought you said you were coming to Dallas
for your first anniversary. Am I invited?
Oh, you texted me that you were coming to Dallas soon.
I don't recall texting you that at all.
Oh, okay.
I think you're delusional.
You said there was a Hooters bar.
Tally Rockers. No, like you and Mr. December should go to the Tallywhackers and do it as a podcast segment, like a gay and a straight guy at Tallywhackers.
Yeah, we can do that.
I think that sounds like a
Gaykin. Gaykin, if you're listening, call me up. Let's go.
Hey, girl. Anyway, so breaking news in the world of football. Deflategate, and for those who are not football followers, let me briefly describe what Deflategate is. The New England Patriots played the Indianapolis Colts in the AFC Championship game. Midway through the game, the Indianapolis Colts noticed that the balls that the New England Patriots were using on offense seemed to be slightly underinflated. So they brought to the attention of the game refs during halftime. They checked the balls. They reinflated them to the appropriate PSI per the NFL rules. And then in the second half of the game, the New England Patriots proceeded to completely destroy the Indianapolis Colts. So the news of this broke the day after the game, and there was a lot of uncertainty surrounding what was happening, who is responsible for this. Like the first week after the AFC Championship game, it was all about like what happened to these balls. And there was a very humorous Tom Brady interview talking about how he likes his balls handled. And there was like memes out there on the internet about Tom Brady and his balls. Well, there was a report that got released.
Tom Brady and his balls, right?
Yeah, Tom Brady and his balls. Which is a mental image I can think about all day long. So there's a report released earlier this week, and we are recording on May 9th, basically saying that it is more probable than not that the balls were deflated by these two equipment managers for the New England Patriots, intentionally underinflated, I should say, and it was more probable than not that Tom Brady knew that these balls were going to be underinflated. So everyone is now talking about how this affects Tom Brady's legacy, whether he's really one of the best quarterbacks of all time, will he be suspended?
After Ricks.
And for how long he'll be suspended. So I throw it to Jeremy and Spencer. What are your initial thoughts about the punishment that Tom Brady should have? Is this a big deal? Does it taint his legacy? What are your guys' thoughts?
I mean, I'll go for Spencer. I don't think it taints his legacy at all. At the end of the day, there's no substantial proof that he was purposely doing this. They said that he probably did it. And, you know, it's one of those things that should there be more than a slap on the wrist? Yes. Should it have happened? No. But, you know, there's reports that it's a team that got destroyed who is bitter and are the ones that complained about it. And the Colts, who lost by like 35 or so in that game. And my biggest beef with it is there's reports that Brady's going to be suspended for anywhere from two games to half a season. And that is insane. And the worst part about the NFL, which is there's a lot wrong with the NFL, as much as I love it, it's completely corrupt and not good. Goodell is going to give Brady this crazy fucking suspension because ever since how badly he's fucked up domestic abuse in the past, where, again, he suspended Ray Rice for, at the time, I think it was two games, where there was videotape of him punching his wife, he feels like he needs to set an example, and he's going to give Brady way too much of a punishment, Spencer. I mean, I don't think Brady should really be suspended for this, and I think it's obnoxious that he is going to get potentially half a season he's going to miss.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, I think the act of what happened is pretty ridiculous. Like, I think the reality is Tom Brady wanted, like, you know, he's a control freak, and so he needs, like, the edge of, like, I want my balls to be this perfect size. And totally all, right?
Ooh, Brian. Ooh.
But, breathtaking, right, Brian?
It really is. Later, like I'm imagining those things just.
I need my balls to be a perfect size. So yes, but I think where he's going to come down, the NFL is going to come down hard on him, is because he's been basically lying about this all along. He claimed like he didn't know the equipment guy, didn't know his name, but yet there's text messages between the two of them. He won't hand over his text messages. I think because he has a dick pic, like Brett Favre probably sent back in the day. I think he probably has something
but
like that.
But not to interrupt you, Spencer, but that's so stupid for them to say, right, hand over your phone. In this day and age...
I completely agree with you, but I think because of all that ancillary stuff that he's, like, lied about it, I think the NFL is, like, going to be real... Like, they're pissed that he's, like, thinking he's above them and that he doesn't need to, like, play ball with them. So I think because of that... And I don't really think, I personally don't think he's going to get a huge suspension. I think he's going to get a fine, and I think he'll probably get like maybe a two-game suspension or whatever. But I think the NFL's rationale is you're messing with the integrity of the game. Now, no doubt domestic violence is far worse than a sport. But I think the way they look at it is anything where, I mean, they'll never come out and say this, but anything where such heavy sports betting and the international aspect of the NFL, you know, the marketing and all that, all those components of the NFL, I think that in their mind is so important to protect that they won't tolerate. Just like in the NBA when there was like the referee shaving points scandal, you know, that's you're messing with the future of the sport almost. And while this is not end all be all, I feel like Roger Goodell is going to try to make an example out of Tom Brady because in his mind, you're messing with the integrity of the game by changing.
I completely agree. You basically, you have to reassure people that the fix isn't in, that these games are like legitimate competitions that, you know, the best team wins or not necessarily the best team wins, but that if a unusual result happens, it's not because of any shenanigans. And I think you're right, Spencer. A lot of it has to do, in my mind, with the fact that sports betting on NFL games is a multi-billion-dollar industry. And if you lost faith in the results of these games, then all of a sudden, and it basically gets the same respect that pro wrestling does.
Wait, now there's anything wrong with that.
You know, nobody wants to think that the NFL is scripted. So I think you're right. Goodell is going to have to do something. He's going to have to set some kind of suspension, a hefty fine. But in my mind, it doesn't taint Brady's legacy because Brady destroyed them in the second half of that game. And then in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl, led two masterful drives.
We don't need to go into detail about the Patriots. We get it. They're a good team. All right. But, and also, another thing about the Patriots, though, let's not forget about the Spygate thing. Now, that was legitimate cheating on my end. And I think they dropped the ball on that whole Spygate thing. Not just that game against the Jets in the regular season, but that there was actual proof in the Super Bowl that they taped the St. Louis Rams.
That is a more, yeah. And that goes back to a
fundamental like issue is like the NFL has just dropped the ball in the past. Like you said, they dropped the ball at domestic violence. They dropped the ball on a clear act of cheating, and then they proceeded to delete the videos showing it. You know, I mean, like Goodell deleted it like 2 weeks after the fact. Nobody could really investigate any further. And that's the problem is that it's like, to me, that was a real serious act of cheating and they hid the evidence. This one, I mean, they took 350 pages to write down that, yeah, the balls were deflated and we think Brady knew about it. I mean, like, no one cares that much. We cared about the other things. So I think they're trying to make up for it with this thing.
Well, I do think Brian cares about Brady's balls.
Make sure they're the right size, too.
I will do if he needs it. I will do a physical inspection on game day every single week. Like I'm there. He doesn't have to pay me anything. I'll do it pro bono.
It's about time to wrap up the show, but it is May and it is the TV finale season. And Spencer has the top three shows from this past season that you should be watching and setting your DVR to record for next season. So, for Jeremy Katz and Spencer Yasbin, I'm Brian Martinson, and we will catch you next time. Spencer, take it away.
The spring TV season is coming to a close. Now, it's time for an early recap of the shows you need to be watching next fall. It's Spencer's top three must-see. Number three, happy ending lovers who were sent in a downward spiral after the sudden cancellation of arguably the best comedy on TV, Worry No More. The creators have come back with a solid replacement in Marry Me, starring Penny from Happy Endings and Children's Hospital's Ken Marino. This time, the fanbase will let their voices be heard, as the show will have a long tenure on WNBC. Number 2. Mindy Project. What else needs to be said? Mindy Kaling's witty writing and strong ensemble cast has me grinning after each subtle remark. Look for Fox to build their new comedies around Mindy and dramas around... Number 1. Backstrom. It's a hit, says the critic Ass Man Yasbin, and everybody else for that matter. Rainn Wilson has successfully branched out of his Dwight character and into a foul-mouthed, edgy detective that leaves you always wanting him to say one more time, I'm you. CBS, pay attention. CSI out, Backstrom in. Time to set the DVR.